On this episode of Skeptico, we'll look at Chris Carter's examination of the skeptical community.
You have to remember that the argument is not really about the evidence. The argument is about their assumptions and their preconceptions. Their preconceptions are that these sort of phenomena don't make any sense and challenges their worldview. And so they're going to do anything they possibly can to dismiss evidence that challenges their preconceptions.
I don't agree with you. And one of the good things about really getting in and really creating a dialogue with these guys is what I see is they really believe that they have examined the evidence and they believe that they've honestly come to a different conclusion.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, we have part two of our interview with Chris Carter, author of Parapsychology and the Skeptics. And as the lead-in reveals, the discussion gets into a bit of a family squabble, a little bit of a disagreement between Chris and I on a couple of points. But I think those points are important because they boil down to how we view the skeptical community. And it comes down to what I term as dialogue versus dismissal. The question is whether skeptics are worth dialoguing with, or whether you think that their rigid views have become nothing more than an ideology and further conversation, further evidence, further experiments are just a waste of time. Well, I certainly understand how tempting it is to go there, but I really don't think it's the case. I really don't think we should give up on the skeptical community, and I think it's important to occasionally step back and consider things from a skeptical point of view, from a skeptical worldview. I mean, fully consider all the nonsense that gets peddled as science in our society, and the absolute lunacy of fundamentalist religion. You know, if you remember back on the political debates we've been having in the United States, it's virtually impossible for any candidate to not declare their church-going bona fides in public. I mean, you cannot get elected if you don't do that. And that, I think, has to factor into this whole equation that we're looking at. Don't get me wrong, I still think the skeptical community has steered far off course, particularly when they ventured into the science of human consciousness, including the parapsychology stuff we've talked about. And they need to be called to task for this. And Chris Carter does an excellent job of it in his book, Parapsychology and the Skeptics. But let's not give up on the dialogue, the discussion, the give and take between intelligent people who just disagree. And as a proponent or a believer or whatever you want to call it, let's not be too disappointed or upset when people don't change their minds because of what we've discovered. And I guess that last point is particularly relevant to me as I've just released the second video from the Dogs That Know experiment. If you haven't seen it, you can check it out at the Skeptico website. Now, I think this video is a very convincing example of a dog waiting for his owner to come home. I mean, the dog waits in the exact spot that the owner predicted. He never goes there when the owner is out. He goes there almost the whole time when the owner's on the way home. But of course, to a lot of skeptics, this isn't proof, or it isn't enough proof. And of course, they're right, it isn't enough proof. There's still a lot of work to be done. There's more dogs to be tested. But the bigger question is, will there ever be enough proof? Will there ever be enough trials and enough controls to convince a significant part of the skeptical community? And I think the answer is yes. But then, I'm a bit of an optimist. Stay with us. Much more Skeptico to follow in just a minute. So we're going to jump right back into my conversation with Chris Carter on his book, Parapsychology and the Skeptics. What is the best way to bring out that paradigm shift, that paradigm change that allows science to embrace these ideas and incorporate them into what we already know? If it's not more research, what is it?
That's why I wrote my books. I think the best way is to show people that the opposition to these psychic phenomena and evidence of survival comes sadly from our intellectual history of a clash between religion and science. And it gave religion, frankly, a bad name in the eyes of many people, and religion retreated, science basically left it alone, religion in the end also left science alone, and I think it's just time we got over this bipolar way of thinking. The choice has to be between fundamentalist literalist religion and fundamentalist mechanistic science, because the fact of the matter is that modern science is no longer mechanistic. It's moved beyond mechanism and materialism. As I said before, many quantum mechanics have said absolutely nothing in psychic research will be compromised by quantum mechanics would be compromised by the existence of psychic phenomena. I go to great lengths to describe that and discuss it in my book. So that's what I think the answer is. I think the answer is basically education.
Chris, are there any other topics that you thought we might want to cover today that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
Well, do you think we covered one of my central points that, these so-called skeptics are basically defending an outmoded philosophy of science that's turned into an ideology for them? Because it really is an ideological struggle for them.
Define for us how you see that ideological struggle shaping up.
I guess I'd first like to contrast ideology with scientific theory and philosophy in order to define my terms. You know, scientific theories are theories that are capable of being tested, or in other words, they're capable of being proven false. Philosophical theories are theories that are not currently capable of being tested. That is, they are much more speculative than scientific theories. The boundary between the two is not absolute, because testability is usually a matter of degree. The ideology of the so-called skeptics is secular humanism or materialism, and it has an anti-religious, anti-superstitious agenda. The skeptics correctly recognize that their ideology is threatened by the claims of parapsychology. And we also have to remember that it's an ideology that's peculiar to the West, because it's been almost entirely in the Western world that we find these attempts to deny, distort, and suppress the evidence for psychic phenomena.
Yeah, but you know, the problem with all that you've just said, not that I disagree with any of it, but skeptics could quite rightly turn all those points around and say that whatever field you have is more ideology than science. And this whole issue of testability being the ultimate measure of what science is, as you point out, somewhat subjective in terms of what kind of tests we can do and how good those tests are. And the other point that you make about it's a Western phenomenon versus what? Fortunately, the West is where all the science is being done, and we can look to the East, and they have many kind of interesting insights into the world, but those haven't worked their way into science very well.
Well, first of all, your point that testability is a subjective criteria, I disagree with that. That's Karl Popper's criterion, and it's objective. It's not subjective just because testability is a matter of degree. Something can be a matter of degree yet not be subjective. Temperature is a matter of degree, for instance.
Right. No, I hear what you're saying, but my wife is a psychologist. So you go in, and as we're just bashing the psychologist, which I'm fond of doing, but you move into the social sciences, into the soft sciences. I mean, testability, it's a joke. I mean, take any psychological study that you want, especially any that's done in a natural setting with real subjects. It's very, very subjective in terms of what you're really testing and how accurately you're really testing it. And that's, I think, part of this whole controversy is as you point out, that psychology, by definition, is very, very difficult to pin down. It's hard to do a good psychological study.
It's on shaky scientific grounds, let's put it that way, because so many things in psychology are difficult to test, or difficult to test with any precision.
Right.
But yeah, again, I do think that this is peculiar to the West, because it's been mostly in the West we've had this historical clash between religion and science. And that's why this debate has been fought with the passion of the Holy War. There are scientists out there, increasingly larger numbers, from Asian countries, Islamic countries, Hindu backgrounds, and these people find the vehement opposition to investigating psychic phenomena to be amazing. They don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense within their culture.
Granted. I do have to say, whenever we talk about the clash between science and religion, I think it's been a good clash. I mean, if anything, yes, science has won. Thank goodness. It's a great part of our history that science has been able to overcome the horribly oppressive tenets of the religion that dominated our lives for so many hundreds of years. So I almost think when we kind of put it in those terms, we do a disservice to science and a disservice to the path forward. Because I think the path forward is not science versus religion. It's science. And it's science in the way that the Dalai Lama has said, hey, I want to use all the best and latest methods to prove my teachings true. And if it proves my teachings are not true, then my teachings need to change. Because these tools that we have of science, these tools of discovery, of understanding, are the best tools that we've been able to evolve. No one has said that these tools don't work. It's just the way that we've applied the tools. So I don't even like putting in terms of a debate between or a clash between science and religion. That clash is over. Science won, and thank God that they did. I just think we can't stop science from pushing forward into these deeper questions and following the data wherever it goes, regardless of the spiritual implication.
I agree with you, but I still think there's an ongoing cultural war, certainly in the United States, between fundamentalist religious people and fundamentalist atheist people. And even more secular people, just battles, for instance, about whether or not evolution can be taught in some of the schools, or if they can use the word evolution instead of gradual change. I'm not knocking the United States. I lived there for several years. I love the country. But the fact of the matter is there are these ongoing cultural battles in the United States, which is why you have fanatics on one side bringing up fanatics on the other, fanatics like Richard Dawkins or Daniel Dennett. Yes, these people are extreme. But they're facing extremists on the other side.
See, I don't really see it that way, and I think that's easy for the Daniel Dennett's and the Richard Dawkins. I mean, they just make the fundamentalist radical religious nuts on the one side just provide fodder for those guys and create this situation where clarity of thought can't be found. You know, the most recent statistics. Surveys that just came out, I think it was from Pew, and it was just published in the last couple of weeks, and it gained quite a bit of publicity here in the U.S., and it was on the spirituality of Americans. And the big headline from that research was that the growing number of Americans that identify themselves as spiritual but not religiously aligned, and they're kind of rolling their own religion, if you will, and this is bemoaned by many of the religious folks, but I think it really hits to where people are at. And the secular humanists, I think, haven't really caught up to that. They're still talking to the televangelist on TV, and that's not really where the action is, and that's not really where the action is in our debate. Those folks are not going to be the ones who are going to be the forward thinkers who are going to lead us out of this kind of quandary that we're stuck in. It's the majority of people who really are open-minded and really are open to finding the best data that they can use to form opinions that really inform their life and align with their life experience and provide a way for them to figure things out. So I think this whole idea of the culture war is really, really overblown. And I think even within what people identify as the fundamentalist Christians, I think when you really break those people down and break down their beliefs, a lot of times what you find is that this fundamentalist, what we're calling fundamentalist Christianity, is a shorthand for saying, you know what? I have a family, I have a system of beliefs that works for me, and whether I'm stuck on one particular issue of the earth being created 10,000 years ago, no, I'm not. I'm just trying to lead my life in a moral way and in a way that's in alignment with these deeper spiritual values that I feel inside and I can't really articulate.
Most of the early psychic researchers, the men who founded the British and American societies for psychic research in the 1880s, These were men who were living in Victorian times, who, you know, the times of the rise of Newtonian science and Charles Darwin, the introduction of Charles Darwin's theories and so on. These were men who were brought up to be religious Christians, as most people were in those days, in those countries, and they basically lost their faith, but they are appalled by the materialism of the then prevailing scientific view, and so they started searching for a scientifically impeccable method of finding an alternative to this bleak outlook. They're searching for a bleak outlook without sacrificing an impeccably scientific method. And that's why they investigated things like apparitions and haunted houses and also extrasensory perception and so on. But today, I really do believe that these skeptical organizations like PSYCHOP, which grew out of the American Humanist Association, these people are primarily, largely motivated by their anti-religious views. They associate parapsychology as somehow being part of something which may lead to greater superstition or a religion. And so they do everything. They have gone to the most extraordinary lengths to deny, distort, and suppress the evidence. I mean, there was even a National Research Council report in 1987, which announced to the press, "The committee finds no scientific justification from research conducted over a period of 130 years for the existence of parapsychological phenomena." And it was a total hatchet job. I mean, they were looking at data gathered by the U.S. Army, and there was a Colonel John Alexander. He's retired now, but he wrote a very blunt article criticizing this NRC report. This NRC report, I should add here, was led by three psychologists, Dr. George Lawrence, a civilian Army psychologist with a history of opposition to Psy research, Ray Hyman, council member of PSYCHOP, and psychologist James Alcock, also a member of PSYCHOP, and widely known for his books and articles attacking parapsychology. So in other words, the NRC appointed three psychologists with widely known views against the legitimacy of parapsychology. They came and they announced a conclusion they didn't find anything. So the following year, Colonel John Alexander wrote a very blunt article criticizing the NRC report. And he basically concluded, "We should worry about the fact the highest scientific court in the land operated in such a biased and heavy-handed manner, and that there seems to be no channel for appeal or review of their work. What, we may ask, are they afraid of? Is protecting scientific orthodoxy so vital that they must deny evidence and suppress contrary opinion?" I mean, that's how these people have operated for decades, and how, to a large extent, they're still operating. See, the topic itself is very complicated, and it took me a whole book, you know, to get my argument across. And I sometimes wonder, how easy it is, or how good I am at summing up some of the main points, and just getting them across, you know, because I really do think that these so-called skeptics are driven by an ideology, and it's something for them that just has to be true, regardless of the evidence, and they're going to do everything they can to deny and suppress any evidence to the contrary.
Well, at this point, I was again about ready to wrap things up with Chris. Then we had this interesting chat about some of the comments that he had made earlier.
My only reservation is sometimes when I hear these 10-second quotes, they're out of context, or it's easy to take them out of context. You know, you hear that guy calling Radin and so on bad scientists, or he says, "I looked at the meta-analysis, and it doesn't convince me." You know, I don't know what was said before that. I don't know if he actually did look at the meta-analysis. I don't know if he actually even did discuss the meta-analysis in any detail.
Well, he did, and you know what's even worse? I mean, really, your point's well taken, but it's really to the other, you know. So he said that Radin was a terrible scientist. He said bad scientist there. At another point, he says terrible scientist. So when I had an interview with him, I kept bringing that. I brought that up a couple times, and he totally wanted to distance himself from that. So I think that's the other thing that these skeptics do. They don't hold themselves accountable. When you make a mistake, I make mistakes. You come out and you say, "Hey, I made a mistake. I was wrong." I've never heard these guys say that. They never back down. So to say somebody like Dean Radin is a terrible scientist, to say Rupert Sheldrick is a terrible scientist, is just... it's just an outrageous claim.
Well,
and when you say it, in heat, you say it in anger, fine. But when someone points out to you, "Hey, you shouldn't have said that," then you say, "You know what? You're right. I shouldn't have said that. He's obviously not a terrible scientist."
Right. But if he says something like that, he should he should either apologize or provide detailed evidence as to why Sheldrake is a terrible scientist.
Of course, exactly.
He shouldn't just say it, because then it's just name calling.
But you know, also if you listen to these interviews that I did with him and Richard Wiseman, where we really deconstructed the JT experiment that you talk about, you do a great job of outlining it in your book. But both these guys just made blunder after blunder. You know, first they fall into the post hoc analysis trap. Oh, Sheldrake did post hoc analysis. And then you point out, no, that's just completely false. He had been doing it this way all along, and to suggest that someone can't analyze data after it's been gathered would disqualify just about every bit of research that's been done. So do they ever go back and say, well, you know, I think you're right on that? No, they just slither over to the next issue and say, ah, there's a pattern. There's a pattern of increased anticipation. Then you point out and say, well, no, that pattern doesn't exist, and here's why it doesn't exist. Then they just get off of that, but they never retract and say, you know what, you're right. That was a mistake on my part. They just move on to the next point. And then when you've beat them on every point, then it's just silence and move on to the next issue.
Yeah, but Alex, you have to remember that the argument is not really about the evidence. The argument is about their assumptions and their preconceptions. That's what the argument in this field is all about. Their preconceptions are that these sort of phenomena don't make any sense and challenges their worldview. And so they're going to do anything they possibly can to dismiss evidence that challenges their preconceptions, because it's much easier to do that and to change their opinion.
It's not the way they see it. And these are smart folks too. Stephen Avella, Richard Wiseman. These aren't dumb guys. And
no,
these aren't.
Not.
These are guys who are qualified. So the fact that they have this kind of blind spot. You know, I really have to tell you, Chris, I don't agree with you. And one of the good things about really getting in and really creating a dialogue with these guys is what I see is they really believe that they have examined the evidence, and they believe that they've honestly come to a different conclusion. And you know where I think it really reveals itself is when you talk to somebody, and this quote, I didn't play it, but one thing Novella says that I think I have some empathy for. He says, hey, you know what? We deal with so many claims. We deal with UFOs and Bigfoot and homeopathy. We deal with all these things. So we're dealing with so many different claims, you know. Forgive me if we don't dig into all of them, but they all say the same thing. All these proponents are saying the same thing that you're saying. So I think that's where they're coming from. Not that they have some deep psychological need to defend their territory. Maybe they do, but they don't see it that way. They just see it quite rightly, really, that there's a lot of bunk out there, and that given that there's so much bunk, it's a better starting position to say, you know what, if it doesn't fit the way that I observe the world working on a day-to-day basis, then it's probably bunk. You take James Randi, for example. Hey, debunking is great. You know, you go find some televangelist who has an earpiece and is picking up information that his wife is passing from the back of the room, and that's what he's using to do his psychic trick. Hey, great. Debunk that guy all day long. And in the process, he's pointing out that there are people out there that are fraud. So we can't go too far in the other extreme and pretend that there aren't people out there who are perpetrating fraud.
Well, Alex, I don't think that people like Richard Wiseman or Alvaretto, I don't think these people are truly open-minded. I mean, it's one thing to say, like Michael Shermer will say, you know, I would love to see skeptical abilities. I would want to believe in these sort of things. But the fact of the matter is these people are not open-minded, and they show by their own actions that they're not willing to play the game honestly, and they're also willing to make any excuse to get out of having to admit they're wrong. I'll give you just like some examples here. A few years ago, Raymond Hyman wrote about the Gansfeld. The case for psychic functioning seems better than it ever has been. I also have to admit that I do not have a ready explanation for these observed effects. That was the end. As I said, at the end of a long debate on whether or not the Gansfeld proved telepathy, if it was about evidence, just plain simple evidence, the debate would have been settled long ago. If this were any other field, which was not loaded with these metaphysical implications, the debate would have been settled on the evidence long ago, perhaps 1950.
I hear you, Chris, but I think one of the biggest mistakes that proponents, if you will, believers, you know, all these terms that don't really work, but one of the biggest mistakes they make is assuming that these skeptical organizations and these leading skeptical critics are different than you and I. And as I've spoken with these people, I've found that that's not the case. They don't get together in some dark room and say, okay, they've beat us on this point. Now, how do we attack them back on this? And how do we do this? I think it's all a very subtle thing. And in exploring that and understanding where they're really coming from, the one thing I do see is there is a lot of misinformation about science out there. And I think they feel very motivated to kind of expose that. I think what they lack is the ability to discriminate. And once they get going, it's like, you know, if you have a hammer, all the world looks like a nail kind of thing. I think that explains a lot of it.
Well,
I just don't believe Steve Novella and Richard Wiseman are getting together and saying, okay, yeah, they've really beat us down here, but we need to defend the materialistic paradigm. So in order to do that, let's do this. I think they say, gee, there's so much crappy science out there. I'm just going to assume that this is crappy science until I'm really proven otherwise. And then when you prove it, they say, well, you know, I've been in a lot of tussles in science where you really have to prove it over and over again. And those are the standards you should meet. And there is some argument to that. I mean, you know, I look at Rupert Sheldrake's work, and I just spoke with a guy down at the University of Florida, Clive Wynn, who is very, very hardcore skeptic. And the one thing he said that I really don't have a response for is, how come he didn't do more? How come he stopped? How come he stopped when he replicated the work with Kane, the second dog? Why did he only do 9 trials? Why did he only do 12 trials? Well, after going through it and seeing how hard it is to do, I can understand why he stopped. But on the other hand, if you're really breaking that kind of new scientific ground, man, do it over and over and over again until there's no question that you've proven it. And that's a valid criticism.
No, actually, I don't believe it is a valid criticism, because if he had done 100, then he'd say, well, why not do 200 and do 300? Why not do 500? Why not do 1,000? And the fact of the matter is that the case for the evidence of psychic phenomena has been overwhelming since at least the 1950s. No matter how much evidence people produce, no matter what kind of evidence people produce, the skeptics will still keep coming back and saying, no, it could have been this, it could have been that, these people are bad scientists, they're incompetent, maybe they cheated. And that's what they've been saying for decades. And
I know that's what they've been saying for decades, and maybe I'm naive and an idealist.
The argument now is not about the evidence, it's about the underlying preconceptions of the people on one side and the other.
The reason I don't like that, Chris, the reason I don't buy into that is the one good thing about doing this show is in talking to these people, and I can only go by, you know, I've spoken with you now, and I feel like I know where you're coming from. In talking to these folks, I just don't get the sense that they're trying to perpetrate some kind of fraud like that. I don't think they're trying to do that. And I don't think they're so deeply deluded that they are kind of fooling themselves in that way. I think they just really don't believe that the evidence is there.
It's not a question of delusion. It's not a question of fraud or being conscious of, well, let's just try to, you know, keep the truth under wraps. It's not that at all. It's that they've got these beliefs which they've been holding for decades, which are central to their personalities. And they are terrified of those beliefs being challenged and becoming unraveled.
And that they'll tell you that that's just not the case.
Well,
they'll just directly say, and these are rational people like you and I,
yes.
and I don't believe that they're any different than you or I.
I don't think
they have some deep, deep fear that is buried deep in their subconscious that they can't quite get in touch with. No, I just don't think they've seen enough evidence.
No, I disagree entirely. It's not about evidence. It's about the preconceptions of disputants. I mean, after Price, back in 1955, wrote that, he then argued ESP is incompatible with certain scientific theory, offered absolutely no evidence to that effect, then said, if parapsychology and modern science are incompatible, why not reject parapsychology? So the assumption there is that there's something about parapsychology which is incompatible with modern science. In other words, that the laws of physics and chemistry as we know them would have to be rewritten if this were true. Susan Blackmore said that on several occasions. Ray Hyman comes out and says that. If Utz's conclusion is correct and the fundamental principles that so successfully guided the progress of science in the days of Galileo and Newton to the present must be drastically revised. Neither relativity nor quantum mechanics in the present versions can cope with a world that harbors the psychic phenomena so boldly proclaimed by Utz and her parapsychological colleagues. So yes, it's about them thinking that it's basically impossible. They don't want to change their minds. It's an ideological struggle. There's more to it than that. Have you heard of a book called Extraordinary Knowing?
No.
I wrote a review for it in the last issue of Journal of Parapsychology. I've got the review in front of me right now. Extraordinary Knowing was written by this psychologist named Elizabeth Meyer, who one day, her daughter lost a harp, and so a friend suggested she call a dowser. And so the dowser over the phone accurately located the house in which the stolen harp could be found. And this just blew Elizabeth Meyer's mind. She couldn't believe it. She couldn't figure out how it could be possible. Psychologist, remember. And so she went on basically trying to reconcile these experiences, and she led her into constant confusion. She thought that, you know, this was contrary to all of science and doesn't make sense. And then at one point she began reading literature, and she turns to the Skeptical Inquirer, and she writes, "I had high hopes for what PsyCop's journal might provide. At the very least, it would, I thought, offer useful balance to journals with a clear bent toward belief in the paranormal. I was particularly enthused about the Skeptical Inquirer's policy of reviewing research on anomalous mental capacities published elsewhere. I figured that PsyCop would help me come up with the useful challenges to articles written from the more credulous side. But it didn't work out that way. Reading the Skeptical Inquirer was like reading a fundamentalist religious tract. I found the journal dismayingly snide, regularly punctuated by sarcasm, self-congratulation, and nastiness, all parading as reverence for true science." And there was another, there's a quote in my book from Henry Bauer. He wrote that, he was the editor of the National Enquirer, and he wrote to another fellow that the purpose of the journal is not to examine anomalous claims, but to argue against them. See, this is propaganda. And Elizabeth Myers goes into talking about how she was just terrified of psychic phenomena, terrified that they might be true. It made no sense to her at all, until finally, near the end of her life and near the end of the book, she finally discovers quantum mechanics. And this she writes, "Quantum mechanics offers a very welcome sense of permission to anyone grappling with apparently anomalous experience." So yeah, and That's why most of these critics are psychologists. They're not quantum physicists, because they're under the delusion that these things are all unscientific. They make no sense. Therefore, they must be false. And they're also afraid to change their opinions. That's really what it's about. I really don't think that any more evidence, because there already are mountains of evidence out there, is going to change anyone's minds, except maybe some of the open-minded, uncommitted people.
Yeah, I'm not convinced of that. And I think that there's just too many cases in science and in our society in general where change is slow and it takes time, but it really takes a mountain of evidence. You know, we've used the word paradigm. The original, you know, Kuhn's writing on paradigm is so instructive in how this works, in that, you know, the evidence piles up little by little by little until it just reaches this tipping point where it just switches over the other side. And I've also been speaking with Dean Radin. I think he had a really interesting insight on this, and I think he's right on target. He said, you know, when it changes, it'll change overnight, and everyone who was on the other side will come back and say, oh yeah, but I kind of always believed this was true, and they'll just do a little switch, and the whole situation will be different. And so I do think it's about evidence, and I think it's about piling more and more evidence and making that evidence accessible and getting it to the right people to reach that tipping point where you have the paradigm shift, because it's going to happen, and it's already happening in some ways, but it hasn't happened to its full extent. But I think it will.
I agree with you, except getting the evidence to the right people is an important point. Getting more evidence to these so-called skeptics is not going to change their mind. They're never going to change their mind. I'd like to read you something here from my book. Well, actually, here's a quote from the great physicist Max Planck. He's the inventor of quantum mechanics. He remarked in his autobiography, "A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it.
Yes, that's a great quote. I've heard that many times. Well, Chris, thanks a lot for joining us. And I'm definitely going to have two shows out of this because this discussion we had at the end, I think, is very, very relevant to the whole thing we were talking about as well.
Okay. This is good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Chris Carter for joining us today on Skeptico. If you haven't checked out his book already, please visit Amazon.com. Give it a look. Just packed with very solid, well-researched information. The book title is Parapsychology and the Skeptics. There's a foreword by Rupert Sheldrick and very, very positive reviews on the back cover. It's a great read. You'll really enjoy it. For more information about Skeptico, to check out our past episodes, drop us an email or post us a comment on our forums, check out our website at Skeptico, SKEPTIKO.com. Stay with us. Future episodes coming up have some great interviews lined up. Thanks for joining us today. Bye for now.